Cloudcast Media presents from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome back to The Cloudcast. We are coming to you live from the massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And if you happen to be watching this on YouTube today, you'll notice something's a little bit different. We are actually out there doing the show in video. So Aaron and I mentioned this on last week's show. I'm just doing a follow-up in case you skipped a show or something and you're following up. One of the things that Aaron and I have been kind of exploring for quite a while now is, you know, where is our audience? How do we continue to grow our audience? What will the future of our audience look like? And one of the things that we've sort of realized is a couple of things. Number one, you know, there will always be places where you can get podcasts. There are plentiful podcast players, whether they are sort of linked to Apple Podcast or what used to be Google Podcast or Spotify or any of the other services, YouTube podcasts and stuff out there. But what we've learned is that as the social media, at least the text-based social media, have sort of fragmented, disintegrated in some cases. So, you know, the Twitters and the Threads of the world, or, you know, whether you use Facebook or something along those lines, those have sort of, at least in the tech community, you know, now that we have things like Blue Sky and Pachyderm, whatever the other one is, you know, we used to be very concentrated around Twitter. And what we've learned is that the concentration has sort of diffused, but also more and more people, whether they are younger people or just people in general, are also learning quite a bit from some of the video-based services. So whether that's Instagram or TikTok or something else. And so what we decided to do was, at one point, we said, well, maybe we should become more of a video-centric show. I think what we realized is we're just going to record the shows in video. We're going to publish them as audio. And where necessary or where it's valuable, we're going to let the video be an augmentation of the show. So it'll allow us to do some video clips that we'll be able to put out on various social media. And hopefully it'll, you know, it'll attract somewhat of a newer audience, some people that are looking to learn some things, people that are new. That's really always been the focus of the show. So anyways, with that, we'll put a link in the show notes. If you do want to subscribe to the video channel, we'll have both the full shows as well as snippets and so forth. Oftentimes, just from an editing perspective, Aaron and I are still working through some things as to how to make this best. We also have recorded some shows prior to starting this videos thing. So there maybe is still a few more shows here in April of 2024 that don't necessarily make it to video. But our hope is that by May, or at least May and June, we sort of have everything in both video format as well as audio format. Nothing will change as far as how you get the audio on your regular podcast player. Our hope is that some of the new tools that we're using as part of this will actually make the audio quality better. They are some pretty interesting things, especially when you haven't necessarily updated your tools in quite a while, or we haven't updated our tools. So anyways, with that, today's Sunday perspective. Oh, one other thing. The other thing we've been looking at is how frequently the shows come out. And we still think there's value in the twice a week show. But we do find that the Sunday show seems a little bit close to the Wednesday show. Maybe there's a little more room that people have as far as, you know, do they listen to the Sunday show as more of a weekend thing and the Wednesday show is more of a, you know, during work type of thing. So we'll likely be moving the Sunday show to Saturday. So they will move from being Sunday perspectives to Saturday perspectives. Nothing else about that will change. But over the next couple of weeks, I'll likely be moving the Sunday show to Saturday. So, all right, with that, let's get to today's show. So a couple of weeks ago, I published a show that was five things that if you are thinking about doing AI, that you probably needed to have done well in cloud, or that you're probably going to need to upskill your cloud skills in order to be successful in AI. And we got a lot of good feedback about that. We got a lot of good uptake in terms of listens and so forth. And it got me thinking, you know, how much of what we learned from especially the early adoption, from sort of the early adoption to sort of later or sort of middle adoption of cloud, do we think is possibly going to follow similar patterns for AI? And I'm specifically interested in what that will look like for the enterprise, because what we saw in terms of early cloud adoption, you know, was a certain amount of shadow IT, but it was also a lot of startups. And again, the times were a little bit different in terms of how easy it was to get VC funding. But I kind of wanted to go back and take a look at, you know, what were the patterns that we saw in terms of enterprise cloud adoption? What drove it? What necessitated it? What drove it? Maybe for good reasons and bad reasons. What have been some of the sort of downsides, if you will, of how it was adopted. And again, I'm not trying to place a, you know, kind of a tag on the technology, but just what did we see good and bad? And do we think any of those patterns or variations of those patterns will continue as we start to look at AI adoption? So we're going to do that after the break. And we're back. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, we're going to dig into, you know, will there be, or do we expect there to be any similarities in the patterns of adoption, whether those are technology patterns or whether those are sort of organizational patterns or whether they're just sort of at an individual level, we'll see certain patterns emerge that follow how cloud was adopted from an enterprise perspective to how AI will be adopted from an enterprise perspective. So, you know, what do we think will likely sort of be a similar pattern? Where do we expect to be, you know, big divergence? Where is there a lot of unknown about what's going to happen? And so I thought what I would do is sort of dig into that today. Because again, like I mentioned, you know, the top of the show, we had done a show about kind of the connectivity between if you want to do AI well, you have to do certain previous cloud things well. And that got quite a bit of listens and sort of feedback from people. And so I thought this would might be a good follow-up. All right. So, you know, if we think about how enterprise cloud was adopted, and I don't necessarily, I'm not trying to sort of frame this as sort of like enterprise technology of cloud, but how the enterprises kind of adopted cloud as it came out. And the thing to remember is when cloud first came out, you know, a lot of the framing of it, and again, a lot of this was from AWS because they really were one of the kind of the first ones to really A, be successful with cloud, but B, you know, begin to really tap into a set of concerns that the enterprise had or people that were using enterprise IT in which, you know, what the cloud provided was very appealing, right? So the patterns we tended to see was frustration with central IT, often cases, that led to what we often called shadow IT. So the idea that, you know, I wanted certain things in order for me to build an application or a line of business wanted to try some things. Maybe they wanted to experiment. Maybe they had a new idea that was going to take scale that was bigger than typical enterprise IT could do from a purchasing of hardware perspective or scaling out the technology. So there was a whole bunch of different types of use cases. In some cases, they were high scalability. In some cases, they were short-term projects. In some cases, they were experimentation. But in essence, a lot of it was very much, you know, technologists within an organization at an enterprise, if you will, who were frustrated they couldn't get the things done that they needed to get done, not just because they felt like playing with the technology, but because the business needed it. And they, in essence, began to adopt cloud as initially sort of shadow IT, right? So we're going to kind of go around the rules that our central IT organization have. Eventually, as some of that became successful, you would see entire lines of business say, we're going to kind of, you know, diverge from centralized IT. And you know, and so that was sort of the initial thing. It wasn't really sort of an organized using the public cloud. The next thing we tended to see was, you know, some of these success stories. And again, they were interesting success stories because you would oftentimes, you know, hear a customer referenced at one of the trade shows at an AWS reInvent, for example. And they would say, you know, this bank is all in on going to the cloud, or, you know, they are all of their developers using that. And oftentimes what that really meant, if you ended up talking to the customer or you talked to their organization, was, yes, they were using the public cloud. But again, it was more in the, you know, what use cases were we able to carve off in which the public cloud made more sense. But, you know, oftentimes like many of the regulated types of use cases or things in which, you know, data locality mattered a lot or just, you know, a whole lot of that. So, but what we saw from that was once some of the bigger name brands, enterprise brands, a large bank, an airline, an automotive company, a healthcare company, whatever it might be, started talking about, hey, we're using the cloud. There was a fear to a certain extent from other executives within that industry or in industries that felt like they had similar types of use cases or similar types of capabilities that needed to be done. We heard a lot of sort of cloud first initiatives, right? So if you were talking to organizations, you'd oftentimes hear, hey, our leadership team has mandated cloud first, meaning everything that comes next needs to be, you know, deployed into the public cloud first. We're going to stop sort of deploying on premises or in some legacy format, and we're going to start, you know, adopting sort of the cloud, right? And then the concept of sort of the difficult things, if you will, the things in which security is complicated or deployment patterns are complicated or regulatory or things like that were complicated, kind of got taken on secondarily, right? It was like, well, let's go make sure we can make these things work. And oftentimes you'll talk to companies who had started down some sort of cloud path thing, and then they'll kind of come back and they'll go, well, you know, we weren't as successful as we thought we were going to be. We had a hard time adapting from what we used to do that was maybe more hierarchical or more siloed or just complex because our business is complex. We thought the cloud was going to be cheaper or simpler or whatever it was. And, you know, maybe we weren't as successful as we had expected, right? So, you know, it went through three or four different phases, and we're still in a phase right now. We're still, you know, in phases where companies are, you know, rationalizing their spend. Now, if we think about that and we try and think, okay, how much of that will apply to AI? There's a few things we probably should consider, right? When we're doing cloud, so let's say we're migrating something from on-prem into the public cloud, we really were kind of, from an economics perspective, we were talking about CPU to CPU types of applications. So I want to migrate a bunch of applications running on Windows into the cloud. Maybe we're trying to reduce our data center footprint, or we want to move some things into the cloud because they're going to be, you know, they need the scale of the cloud. We want to be able to do auto scaling or whatever it might be. But the economics of it fundamentally were very much sort of CPU to CPU, right? We were running, you know, Dell machines on premises, and now we're running EC2 instances or, you know, Microsoft Azure instances or whatever it would be. And so from a compute cost perspective, you weren't talking about significantly different architectures, right? As we get into AI applications, whether we're, you know, modernizing an application and adding some AI to it or building something brand new from scratch, we're first and foremost talking about very different compute architectures and very different economics of the compute architecture. So that will be an interesting thing to sort of watch, because I know even from talking to early adopter customers, they still are going through the thing that many companies did when they went to the cloud, which was developers kind of want their own toys. They want their own environments. They don't want to share things. They don't want to wait on things. And so, as we often saw in the cloud early days, you know, you saw a lot of over-provisioning. You know, give me the biggest instance possible. I'm going to hold on to it for as long as I possibly can. And, you know, we're seeing that, or we're hearing about that in early adoption of AI in some cases too, especially organizations that are either building a model, fine-tuning a model, testing a model. You oftentimes hear developers who you know, don't love the idea of, hey, I have to timeshare a GPU, or you're trying to do some sort of virtualization of a GPU and share it with my team. Like, I want my own things, right? So that's going to be a pattern that we'll have to sort of watch, because again, when the economics of GPUs are, you know, different than sort of CPU to CPU types of things, that'll be there. The next thing that we'll have to sort of watch is, many times we're seeing these AI applications, and again, you know, we'll have to see sort of what really takes hold. But for example, if you take, say, ChatGPT, right? We're talking about something like having like 1 million paid users early on. And one of the use cases that, I can't remember if it was GitHub was talking about this or OpenAI was talking about this, they were saying, look, you know, one of the most common use cases is developer productivity, right? Trying to augment software developers and helping them write code better, debug things better, sort of, you know, essentially give them an assistant to do these things. And it'll be interesting to watch this, because to a certain extent, that use case is fundamentally, you know, sort of people productivity. And the reason I mention this is because it's one of the most commonly talked about use cases from an AI perspective that people can kind of wrap their head around. Like, I'm going to give you an assistant that doesn't replace your job, it augments your job. And, you know, we for a long time have sort of said, you know, developers are the new kingmakers. They're high value types of roles. And therefore, I guess if we could make them more productive, since their output tends to be something that is, you know, used frequently in all sorts of things, we're, you know, businesses will just sort of automatically gravitate towards that, right? Because developers are hard to find if we can augment that. But it will be interesting to sort of watch at what point, at what level, at how teams, or, you know, how companies kind of rationalize this, because we've said this in the past, right? We've said this in the past with IT organizations, where it's like, if we rationalized things, we would say, well, they should be investing heavily, for example, in automating things, right? There's no point in You know, it's great that you have a Cisco CCIE or a Microsoft trained person or a VMware trained person or a Oracle certified person, but do you want that person doing sort of all sorts of manual tasks? No. You know, your typical response would be, they have an important job. We want to make sure the network works or the databases are maintained, whatever it might be. But, do I want them doing manual things? No, not necessarily, right? Like, I would like them to focus on higher level value, right? Like, that's always sort of the buzzword, higher level value. But yet, when we look at the automation market as a whole, people tend to kind of downplay the idea of like, well, do I really want to augment? Do I want to pay to augment those people? Right. And I wonder if at some point we go, well, do we really want to pay to augment these developers? Shouldn't they come with a certain sets of skills? Right. So it'll be interesting to see. And I'm not sort of trying to single out developers. What I'm trying to get at is there is a lot of talk about sort of human augmentation with AI. And again, whether it's call centers or whether it's developers or whether it's sales forecasting or whatever it might be, as a group, the IT people, the technology people, have a tendency to not necessarily place a great deal of economic value on if you have somebody already hired to make them 20% more productive or 30%. We tend to sort of have this binary one or zero. Like, could you replace the person? Okay, then I might be willing to pay and invest in that. But if really I'm only augmenting the people, then I don't know that I'm willing to pay for that. I might look for some sort of free capability. And again, this is where it'll be interesting to see the companies that are targeting that sort of augmentation of stuff. How does that factor into the products they build, how they drive revenue, all that kind of stuff. The next thing I got to thinking about was, we oftentimes try and lay out roadmaps for people, right? Like, how do I get from a starting point, something simple, to something more complex, right? And oftentimes you hear this talked about as sort of a crawl, walk, run approach to things. And, I think if we went back and looked, there probably were a lot of, sort of crawl, walk, runs for cloud. I know, I mentioned on a show a couple of weeks ago, the CNCF not only had their landscape, but they had this sort of trail map for, how would you get to cloud native? And it started off with, do containers and then do Kubernetes and, have a registry and all that sort of stuff. And I think what we find is, as an industry, we're very good at painting you a big picture of what's possible. When you get to scale, this is what the big picture will look like. And in some cases, we're very good at giving you a starting point. So, here's the lowest of hanging fruit. Just get started. It's one application on one machine, right? Where I think we struggle, and the reason we struggle for this is, if the starting with one app on one machine or one AI model on one machine is crawl, and run is, you're going to have this company-wide system with self-service capabilities and catalogs that keep track of things for you, and it's got built-in monitoring and all that stuff. People can rationalize what that looks like because they say, okay, that's what things look like at scale. You've got the right governance put in place. But what does walk look like, right? What does the middle look like? And I think the reason we struggle with this is because that's where you have so many variations that can happen, right? If you start with sort of crawl, you start with, one simple thing. In some cases, just getting, two baby steps past that is as far as you need to go because you've satisfied what you're trying to do. You've made yourself 20 or 30% more efficient, whatever it might be. You might've saved some cost. For other instances, like you need to take 10 more steps, but you're really not doing it at scale. Maybe you're doing it for your department, right? And so I think what's going to be really interesting to watch is, do patterns emerge of not what crawl looks like, because I think there's lots of good examples of crawl. There's lots of starting points for things. I think we will see over time what run looks like, but I think we're going to see tons and tons of variants of what the things in the middle look like. And this is normal, right? It's not everybody needs to get, not everybody needs to go from being like, I went for a walk to, I hiked around, some great mountain pass to I climbed, Mount Kilimanjaro. There's lots of variations of like, well, I enjoy going for a hike. I enjoy going for a hike that's mostly uphill. I enjoy going for a hike that's 1 mile versus 5 miles. I like going with friends. All those sort of variants, I think, will sort of be in between. And I think what's going to be really interesting is cloud never really allowed themselves to sort of fixate on what the middle was. It sort of came along and it said, we are going to, you know, the cloud providers, for example, said, we're not going to tell you how to get there. We're just going to give you as many tools as possible. You can be a builder, right? It will be interesting to see if AI follows this model, because again, you know, there was lots of paths to get there, but there didn't have to be this like sort of uber like data science person in there. So it'll be interesting to see where we find those walk paths that are both more cost effective, can use maybe lesser skilled people to help us have big gains, versus where do I need really the sort of the you know, super geniuses to help make some of these things happen. Now, that again goes along with, you know, how well AI use cases are going to be defined. And this is going to be another really interesting thing, because I think for a lot of people, they're now fascinated with generative AI, obviously. And it's in some cases easy to say like, well, this seems like it could do a ton of stuff. But if you really dive down into it, you know, and you talk to people who live around the AI space, so much of what they'll talk about will be kind of well-defined predictive AI models, right? I want to forecast what might happen. I want to give a recommendation. I want to be able to do something like computer vision, to be able to look at a whole bunch of pictures, or a car crash, or, you know, if I'm an insurance company and I want to look at a car crash and determine what the cost is going to be. If I'm a, you know, healthcare company, I want to sort of augment my people that do predictive modeling, right? But when you get into generative AI stuff, a lot of the things that are being thrown around or being shown don't necessarily always feel like they're applicative to really broad horizontal, you know, enterprise things. So yes, helping developers write software, absolutely, it could apply to any industry. But being able to use a thing that, you know, creates video, you know, is that going to apply much more towards the media industry than it will, you know, maybe your social media team? Yeah, maybe. But again, is the impact that big of a deal? So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how quickly companies are able to, you know, use experimentation to figure out their use cases, how much tolerance they're going to have for experimentation in terms of, you know, these experiments may not necessarily be cheap. You know, they may be very expensive, depending on how well they understand things, how well they're willing to sort of go from crawl to run or crawl to walk and so forth. So I think it's going to be very interesting to sort of watch how those models, you know, in terms of use cases to business value versus use cases for experimentation evolve. The next thing that is sort of on my list is more in the, I'll call it sort of negative territory that we have in terms of talking about AI. And it's really going to be, you know, as individuals, as consumers, because we're not, you know, most of the cases you can get a $50 account, a $10 account, you can get, you know, 10 free pictures on, you know, something like Stability AI or something. You're willing to spend a couple of hours and maybe a few dollars, you know, a couple of cup coffees worth of time experimenting with stuff. And you put up with, you know, most of it's right, maybe 5% of it's wrong. Maybe you get a hallucination here or there, but you're not necessarily going to get sued if you get something wrong, right? That's most of the kind of consumery stuff. What's going to be interesting is what the tolerance will be for the enterprises for this expectation or kind of things that are built in, which is that level of hallucination that comes with generative AI, right? And we've seen some examples of this. You know, there was an airline recently that got sued by somebody because of one of the answers from their chatbot was kind of incorrect. The city of New York recently had a problem where it had trained one of their models that had to do with real estate, and the answers that it was giving were actually telling people to break the law. You know, so you're going to see instances like that. Those things will grab attention in the news and so forth, because there's, you know, the news media may be looking to create a balance of, like, you know, really interesting stuff versus, hey, negativity or downsides that you should consider. And it'll be interesting to see how much that influences the enterprise and what we see, you know, what industries or even what types of leaders do we see that are willing to, you know, to look past that versus feel like, you know, that needs to be more of a solved problem before they're able to go forward. And then the last thing I had on my list was, you know, if you followed the enterprise cloud space, fairly closely, and you were not just following the technology, but also following the people, is you saw a lot of people who realized, if I'm early on this and I do some sort of resume driven development, or I'm willing to take on an early project for my company, right? So if this works, so on and so forth. And I think they didn't do this with malintention, but they also realized, like, as they started working on these things, like, this is going to take more than a few weeks. This is going to take more than a few months. This is probably going to take a couple of years. And then what we saw was we saw a number of people who would bounce around from company to company, whether you were talking about the banking industry or the technology industry or wherever it might be, that never really completed projects, but they were always the first ones to raise their hand and say, let me lead the project. Let me get us started. And of course, as we've seen in the past, whether it was, the person who, led the SAP supply chain project in the past, or it was the person that led the digitization project, digital transformation project. I think we're going to see people that raise their hand to drive the AI project. And it will be interesting to see, if the enterprise continues to sort of reward that as something that they're willing to, give people budget to go play with and, put up with a bunch of failures, whether we'll see people that make, small gains within an organization, do a few talks at conferences, and then we see them bounce around from organization to organization, sort of promising that they can bring that same sort of thing. That was a pattern that we saw quite a bit as the cloud emerged over a 6 or 8 year period. It'll be interesting to see if we see that emerge with AI as well. So anyways, just some things to think about. I didn't really dive into so much the technology. I wanted to think a little bit about some of the economics, some of the tolerance for, innovation versus sort of failure and experimentation, some of the people organizational types of things. But I'll be interested, I'd love to get your feedback on, what you're seeing at your organization in terms of, are there patterns about, how you talk about AI, how you begin to experiment with AI, how you begin to pick your use cases, which deployment patterns are working? Where are you in the crawl, walk, run stages? How does your organization talk about that? So would love to hear feedback from people about that. Would love to hear, actual examples, whether you want to shoot us a note at show@thecloudcast.net or, come on and be a guest at some point in time. I'd love to hear all that. So anyways, with that, I'll wrap it up. Thank you all for listening, whether you're listening on the podcast or whether you're listening in video format. If you get a chance and you like it, or you like the video format, or you want to give us feedback on some other stuff, again, always show@thecloudcast.net or give us a rating on Spotify or Google or Apple or wherever you get your podcast. Love 5-star rating, but also would love, kind of a review and any sort of feedback always helps us make the show better. So with that, I'll wrap it up and we will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.